Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about podcasts while driving, covering a periodic table, I suppose, concert I went to, and I suppose there'll be some amusement because I wasn't too happy with it overall, and people have listened to me to know that I'm into reciting the periodic table, looking at the quantum mechanics of it and stuff like that. And there was a, in the Sydney Recital Hall, which is sort of, if you can imagine, not the centre of Sydney where there's Circular Quay and the Opera House and the stuff, but further back, in the very centre of the high skyscrapers, is the Sydney Recital Hall. And in that, these two people, a chemist from the School of Physics, the School of Chemistry in Sydney University, and a PhD candidate, who both have credentialed as science communicators, with funding from the Australian government, called Inspire Australia. This is just to communicate science. It's this sort of slush fund that they've been able to do and brand, and it's all, and it's sort of in-house sort of stuff. And this is the 150th birthday of the periodic table, which I suppose is you know, something. And their thing was, with a huge concert hall, a piano there, they were going to do the music and the periodic table. And of course, if you've listened to me before, I've done podcasts on music and the periodic table. I can't quite remember what I've said about it. But in terms of frequency of light and atoms being instruments and all this very fascinating stuff. And then we had this, and there were two people. It was, I think, Dr. Alice Motion and Tom Gordon. Tom Gordon's in the physics School of Physics as a communicator, all very, very serious, and, you know, we were communicators. And, of course, and they began to produce things, and I just submit, I was just overwhelmed, just sort of take it all away from me, in terms of I'm going to cruise through here. So I'm just driving home, and just have to, there's just a few things I've got to give away. Oops, I don't know what this doobie's doing here. Okay, and so I'm just going through these complicated little intersections here. Okay, this is a bit of a background. There's the Blue Mountains. There's this large sandstone riverbed which has been lifted up a kilometre above the sea level. And being a pure sandstone seabed with the different strengths of sandstone, it's created this canyon systems, these moulded hills. Basically, also being sandstone, it's incredibly infertile. It looks great, but overall, the Blue Mountains itself is infertile. So what it's done is created this ridge, which everyone lives along. So there's the large Blue Mountains, and it's part of a national park chain which stretches, it's 100 kilometres wide, 100 to 70 kilometres wide, and it's 400 kilometres top to bottom, this national park area. And there's a single train line, which is sort of a bit anachronistic, and because no one would fund a train line, it's sort of from the 18 whatever they are. So it's been upgraded, and a boulder has threatened to fall onto the tracks, and it's been stopped in time. And then when they've begun the work on it, they've discovered there's Aboriginal art around it. And of course, this is a whole new situation where they've got to look after it. And the end result is that my son has to be driven up to work at Katoomba, which is a fuel-hungry ride up the mountains, and then I get to podcast down the mountain, because a poor little thing, I wouldn't podcast with him in the car. He'd interrupt me all the time for sure. We'll just say, oh, Dad. Okay, so I went to this periodic table thing, because there's these, this person who's a bit, what is it? Contemptuous, I suppose. That's contempt. You've got to believe that you are, you know, above contempt. You know, they're not giving you proper respect. That's not quite it, but there's definitely, you couldn't say this person particularly respects anything I do or any knowledge that I had, and has looked on the internet and found out that there's this free periodic table concert, and notified us and booked for us, and my wife or I went in there. Now, given that I have gone on about the periodic table, I'm not allowed to talk about it at all. At home, socially, nothing. Okay, so I had to go to this one, and of course, there were all these mistakes, or just missing the point with the periodic table. And these people absolutely made these big mistakes and loved themselves. So, here's this, watch this. And so, there's some obvious, in-your-face mistakes, like incorrect elements actually in the period. Obviously, most people wouldn't do this, but I sort of like a magnet, especially there's there's certain things which people can't help making mistakes, and there's this mistake area. I'll be back to it. As always, it's a stop at this point in time. Thanks a lot for listening. And this is done an incredible 6 minutes, so it's a minute fast at this point. Okay, I'm back again. That would have sounded no time whatsoever in podcast time. And I'm back on the, getting back onto the freeway again. Now, what I was going to say is, just in terms of this, I will, out of general rehab, get myself driving down one hit. I think this is a bad habit. I'll break this and break that. So certain things, it takes a lot to change your diet. I've got sort of a target weight to get, and basically not to go from black tea to, I just hope I'm okay. I really hate it when I can't quite see the way through. Yeah, you go getting rid of milk in your coffee, getting rid of sugar, having very small breakfasts, very small lunches. Okay, come on across around here, mate. All right, so I've given you a general gist of the Blue Mountains and how the mountains have conspired to have a single train track up it. And through Spectacular Gorges, quite honestly, and being through Spectacular Gorges, that the gorges are built by rock falls and erosion and stuff like that. So that's natural go. And the beauty of finding Aboriginal art there, you know, what is the art? And it's such a beautiful, so poignant. Now, of course, the story behind podcasting is so that I can slowly, cognitively rebuild to be able to get on top. Now, the thing is, it does build certain things, but it means it builds a certain type of communication, and the problem with that is that I can rub it on. Yeah, I've built this and I can rub it on. However, it doesn't mean that I can communicate, which is sort of yet another thing to work on. But the advantage of this is that you've heard me learn the periodic table, discover certain things, develop ways of communicating quantum mechanics. And so it's not that I've not suddenly popped out of the blue. I've got a very strong, well-developed way of communicating it, and it's not surprising that there is actually no surprise that when people stand up there on stage and present the periodic table, that Of course, I would say, oh, it's not up to scratch. But it's also not surprising, because this is the... It's sort of an echo chamber of errors that, you know, people think, oh, this is good enough, that's what I was taught at school. And as long as I can teach what I was taught at school, that will be good enough. And so that's sort of like the... And this is very much... It was like a really poor high school discussion of the periodic table. And there was no complexity to it or anything like that. Now, in terms of the errors, obviously, if you've got the wrong symbol in the wrong place, that's a clear error. You know, that's no matter what... There's sort of framework errors in terms of, oh, if you believe this is good enough and that people only need to understand the classical stuff which we taught them 100 years ago and just keep it all at the same level and never break the quantum bubble, that's an error, that's a framework error. But there's blatant errors which are no matter ways. And now, I didn't get a chance to... I spotted, when they popped up the periodic table first time, a few elements in the wrong place. There's one that I can recall. Of course, this is lutetium. This is the element that people most mistake, the most mistaked element in the periodic table. And for lutetium, in lutetium, initially they don't... Even official periodic tables get them in the wrong place. It puts lanthanum where lutetium should be, La and Lu. Lu is a... It's a rare earth. It's a rare earth in the rare earth group, but it doesn't mean the rare earth group includes scandium, yttrium, scandium, yttrium, lutetium. I'm just trying to work that. Lawrencium, yeah, that's right, that's exactly right. It's under yttrium, and in fact, it's so similar to yttrium, lutetium is very hard to get out. So they put it in the wrong place, but in this periodic table, they put, you know, I was looking for, instantly you scan and you see things wrong, but where they could have put LU or LA, they put RB. I thought, RB? That shocked me. They put rubidium where lutetium should be. So that's an outright mistake. And that's up there. But it's all, this is a periodic table. You can't go, oh, excuse me, you know, in the middle of performance and stuff like that. So, yeah, there was a general thing. And there is this, I suppose, a critical thing, that there is this one element, which there's one town for which four elements have been named after it, and that's and the town is called in Swedish, it's Yttrium, which means outer village, which is equivalent, and so it's the outer, I think, outer village, outer town. I have to really, what Yttrium actually means. I think it's outer town. Trium means town. Yitta means outer. And so there's Yttrium, and it was just a mining camp which had a coffee shop in it, and the coffee shop was basically named the outer village. So, you know, this is extraordinary. There's all these huge battles about naming things, and there's one which that kept on producing it, and it kept on saying, oh, well, we'll name it after this, and I know we got it wrong. And these are the four things that's named after it. Yttrium, ytterbium. Okay, yttrium and ytterbium. There's Y and YB, and then erbium, ytterbium, erbium, okay, and terbium, ytterbium. And so there's these four elements, not one, not two, four elements named after the same one. And also, the problem was that erbium and terbium, right, are very similar elements. And one's got a clear solution, one's got a pink solution. And they mislabeled the bottles, and that's how erbium, which should be terbium, got the name erbium, and terbium, which should be erbium, got the name terbium. Does that sort of make sense? So they mucked it up. So this is beautiful stuff. There's and one element there called strontium, which is the named after Strontia in Scotland, sort of on the edge there. And that's after fairies and ace. But there's all this, and of course there's the seven elements named after celestial bodies, which are, seven, let's go, I'm just trying to work, well, I can get, there's helium for the sun, selenium for the moon, terbium for the earth, palladium for, I think there's palladium for Pallas, cerium for Sirius, this microplanet. Okay, there is a planet between Mars and Jupiter. It's a microplanet. It's not a big planet. It hasn't cleared its own thing. It's perfectly circular, going in a circular orbit in the asteroid belt. Its thing is, it's too small. It hasn't actually cleared the asteroids away from it. So, Dumbo, you don't get to be a planet. But it is circular, and it goes in a circular orbit, and it's Ceres. Okay, right, so there's Ceres, and, you know, that's a planet. You know, but astronomical things. So that's five. Is that right? Serbian, two, and three more, which is five, is eight. There's uranium for Uranus, neptunium for Neptune, and plutonium for Pluto. And there you go. So that's eight. Is that hard to believe? That's eight for it. Again, this is not mentioned at all. In the story. Here is 8 and 4 are 12, and you've got 118, so that's 10% of your periodic table, which you can go. And now you've got the gens. And so you've got oxygen and nitrogen. Oh, yeah, nitrogen, oxygen, and hydrogen. Those gens. So it makes water. Hydrogen. Nitrogen makes nitra for nitric acid or whatever it is, the thing. But nitra is from a place in Egypt, and which is also the same reason why sodium is Na and stuff like that. And potash is potassium. But you've got oxygen makes, oxy means acid, makes acid. Crap, the stuff that... And hydrogen makes water, hydrogen. Yeah, it's just so that's another three elements, and so you're getting into them, and then there's elements of the devil, which is there is elements of the devil, and you want to do, and that's nickel and cobalt, because these elements were killing people when the mines were killing people. I believe that they were the spirit. Now there's killing elements. There's cobalt, nickel, and antimony. Now, why is antimony a dangerous element? Because it's anti-monk. Anti-monk one. It's the element that they used in the ink and used to kill the monks. And the French said, it is antinomy, and SB. Oh, what a great, great thing. Okay, so that's three. And then you've got the colour elements. So, which is indium, cesium, chlorine, for green. Now, fluorine is because it flows. It's used for flowing, fluorine. Now, and there's also, this could have gone for it easily. Now, the bottom line is these people, they're good talkers and good communicators because they don't listen. At the end of that day, if you want to say something to them, they're not good communicators because, yes, communication is a two-way street. You can stand up there, you can get grants, you can pump this out to the audience, but if people try and speak to you and you don't listen, I'm going to call you out and say, look, you're a dreadful communicator, because communication is the transportation of information. It's not the transformation of only the information you understand. It's sort of like someone saying the weather report. What's the weather like? It's absolutely sunny and it's absolutely raining, but it's sunny where you are and you only care about yourself and what you've been taught. You're not looking at weather maps. You're not gathering information. There is actually a process in communication where you actually gain knowledge, test the knowledge, bring it up, and you actually you can get, it's like a person in a madhouse. They can actually really grab you, really convince you that they own things, and they can really tell you stuff. But are they a good communicator? Yes, they can get their information across. They can shout louder than other people, but they're not they are an effective communicator, right? They're very effective, but they're not a good communicator because the information they give you is not quality information. Now, I just want to think, there's color, there's a whole series of elements that which are identified by their color, and there's a whole series of elements which are determined by their rhodium for rose, ruthenium for countries, thulmium for Sweden, holmium, lutetium for cities, going across there. There's colours, the ones that stink, bromine, means stench, osmium, it means whoosh. Apparently tellurium has got various ones make you stink. She was. Now, the bottom line is that this was not covered. And when they talked about music on the periodic table, they didn't mention the fact that all atoms individually are musical instruments, but in the electromagnetic sense. But aside from that, besides electromagnetic, besides light, they are exactly the same as musical instruments and ears. So they can create their music. That is, light of different frequencies, like a thing. And we can listen to them from the start of time. Now, another thing which really upset me is, it's sort of like a body blow to me, that their view is that there's no such thing as isotopes. That is, that a sample of lithium that I get from Australia, which is obvious, is different from a sample of lithium I get from Argentina. The periodic table, the Australian periodic table, is different from the South American periodic table. It's a different, there's a standardized global one, which is an average of all the countries. But every country has its own periodic table. And that, what it means is that the atomic weights vary by small things. Now, that's okay. But when a rock falls from space, it has got it's got components in it which are just remarkably different. It's got a remarkably... And Mars has got a different periodic table. And this is important things to say. The actual table itself, its orientation, but the number of numbers there is different. Now, oh yes, we've got polonium for Poland, radon, radium, and then the other things. And then, what about elements, two girl elements, the elements named after women, and that's curium and metrium. They couldn't even pronounce the elements. Okay, so you've got all that richness of the periodic table missed, but then we came across, so the isotopes are missed, and you can do this, and this is interesting, but then what are we given? We're given this is a grade 8, year 7, year 8, really things that you teach 12-year-olds about how the core of the nucleus, now I must admit, my head is straining because I've forgotten the name of the shift. It's not the Lamb shift, it's another shift. And it's due to the amount, the time that the electron spins inside the nucleus. And this is one of the things that the challenges that the periodic table throws out at you. I just had a drink. I've got to work out where I'm in the Blue Mountains. I'm having such a great time talking. Have I actually gone? I can't believe I would have gone through Lawson without raging. Okay, I'm sure it's still to come. So what you have is your Niels Bohr proposed the liquid drop concept of it should be called bunch of grapes. Most stupid, idiotic, insanely bad thing. And this is where you've got blue and red circles for protons and neutrons in the center of your nucleus, and it looked like a great thing. Okay, and why is it not like that? Well, there's no quantum mechanical laws for it. There is no reason for it. There's just nothing. It's just the most insane. It's sort of like, it would be someone who really was away from school the day that they taught quantum mechanics would say, well, obviously a neutron can't actually sit through a proton. That would be well, unfortunately, I had to tell you that is actually what actually happens. A proton actually sits through sits on top. A neutron sits through the space of a proton. The convenient pictures that you are drawn there do not reflect reality. Reality is that electrons, protons and neutrons, do not have surfaces. They can physically occupy the same space as their partner. They can actually physically, when you're plotting, like you're taking a census of where the electron is and where the proton is, they physically overlap each other in space. And they're not physically small, they're physically big. Because this is quantum mechanics. Now, of course, you go on and you put it up there and you smile and actually put this forward to this audience, and everyone all you do is you lock them deeper and deeper in the closet of ignorance by actually peddling this stuff. Because what happens is that this audience goes, now if you go up in the, if you are mad enough in the lounge afterwards to say, well, of course, they're all wrong, this is not the case, they would say, it's very unlikely. These people are science communicators. They've got the Australian government banner behind them. They're from the university, and they've studied it, and we're paying them for it. Are you saying that we're doing things incorrectly? No, I'm just saying that what they've said is incorrect. And you may not understand this, if they were genuine scientists, they would stop and analyze whether the stuff they were saying was correct or not, and they would analyze it with disinterest. But that doesn't happen. They will go for the personal attack. And if I was to stand up there and say, look, you've got a lot of these things wrong, And look, I've sent an email to them, but I expect that nothing will change. And of course, what was going to happen is that we are going to have generation of, after generation of ignorant people. It is, and I think it was going to be in centuries to come, we're going to look back, if we survive that long, we're going to look back and say, what a dreadful, horrible society that has come up, that we have a society where people have got mobile phones, they've got all these principles, they're using all these principles, and they're using them to gather people around and have concerts and stuff like that, but that the actual people who actually know what's going on, they're the ones who are put in the gulags and cast out. They're the people that cannot, no matter how hard you try, get funding or get any support. And the reason is, it's not that you have to be A, in this institution to do it, which is okay, it's a reasonable thing, but B, what's happened is that the people who don't understand say, well, and they can't, they obviously can't publish papers because they don't understand what's going on. You could not, no one nowadays could publish a paper based on the diagrams that they showed up. So it's like mutually exclusive. The stuff that they're peddling to the public is toxin to actually producing anything worthwhile. And I'm afraid to say so. So they can produce these. And what happens is it pushes them out to the periphery. Their ignorance acts on it and pushes them out to the periphery. I've got nothing against them personally. I don't know them personally. But I do know that there is this arrogance, environmental arrogance, that they will automatically think that people like me are raving people, people against them. I'm not fitting in. I'm not doing it. But I'm a quantum physicist, and I've discovered molecules. I've done supercomputer calculations on them. I know that the electrons are this big, and they do sit through each other. You know, this is what the supercomputer told me. I initially thought, I didn't feel, sort of, when I first got the printouts on supercomputers and stuff like that, I began to ask this question, so where is in all this any of the model that I was taught? You know, where is it? Is there any basis of truth to it? And I wasn't connected to society or anything like this. I was saying, sort of like, you know, you've been sold a house of the plan, you drive up to the property on the weekend to see it, and it's not there. And before you get angry or anything, you have to go, it's at that point, oh, it's not there, it's something different. It's going to be a bit, before you get the thing, I've been sold rubbish or stuff like that, you go through it. So I do remember asking these things, asking these two poignant questions. I think there was one poignant question. I was saying, this is, if you look at molecular curves, potentials, the potential curves of one symmetry crosses with another, and you have this non-crossing rule, and that is, if you have, you never have a potential energy curve cross in quantum physics. So this is one of the laws at the back, and there's an uncoupling of it. You follow it, and you say, oh yes, I can see what's going on. But in reality, it means that you don't have, and you've got these beautiful, sort of like engineering, sort of like Swedish furniture that you can push together, and it's just absolutely hang dog gorgeous stuff. And this is called it's called the non-crossing rule. What I was going to say is I was saying, what happens to the electron at that crossing? You know, physically, where is it? And the problem is that once you're going from an ignorant things, you're unbound. if you can actually be so ignorant to actually say, look, the electron disappears from the universe at one point, travels faster than the speed of light to another point, but in such a way that it doesn't violate the laws of physics. That is how stupid the arguments are. This is the Copenhagen School. Absolute rubbish. Can I say it? It's absolute, utter rubbish, the Copenhagen interpretation. And I can say, so there was this one, this non-crossing, well, what is happening there? And I couldn't get it. And then at ANU with the supercomputer calculations for these electron distributions, and just realizing that there was just, it had to be everywhere at once in a way to fit the Schrodinger wave equation, and that couldn't work. And there was a whole series of things where you were physically transported into the quantum world. And what these people are frightened. It's sort of like, dare I say, the cargo cult. So I'll just quickly go in the cargo cult. They're not stupid. It is naive. It's understandable. So in the Solomon Islands, so let's go. You've got Papua New Guinea, but then there's a series of what in the Pacific coming down off the coast of Australia, a series of islands. There's Fiji and stuff like that. And I only realised recently that Fiji was discovered by the Dutch. They discovered New Zealand, Tasmania, Australia. They didn't bother claiming it because they were a company, and discovered by the Dutch. But coming down is a series of islands, and it looks like a footprint. A series of footprints, and it's the Solomon Islands, Guadalcanal, and that type of stuff. I've got to remember why. The cargo cult. Of course, this is all grist for the mill for me. I'm doing fantastically going down the mountains. Okay. I can't believe, simply because I'm so impassioned talk. What happened is that these people really had not seen any, they've seen sort of a few colonial people in steamships, and then suddenly, if you can imagine, the US arrived with aircraft and guns and the dun 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 dun, US flags and stuff like that, and they come and they say, all right, we're here, and what's going to happen is that at a certain time, the various people say, look, I'm John from Idaho, I'm John from Texas, I'm John from Cincinnati, whatever it is, I don't know, all these US cities, and what would happen is that they'd build an airport, and the natives would see the Americans drilling and stuff like that, and then the plane would fly over, and out of the sky on a parachute would land supplies, and the people looked at this, and this generated the cargo cult. So after the Americans left, the natives would build an airstrip, dress up in uniform, try and dress up in uniform, hold sticks, walk around, and wait for the stuff to arrive from the sky. And they believed in the great person, the great God called John Fromm. John Fromm. And this is absolutely true. And they had built, based on just really fragments of information and stuff like that, an entire culture called the cargo cult. And there's some of these beautiful cults. There's Paxis, this is the gift giving. And just on the way, it's worth doing it. So my mates from Australian Mapping Corps, I'll just tell you a little story. So I just want to tell you stories of Australians, this is people in the South Pacific, just not getting it and building this story around. Now, this Australian Mapping Corps, so Japan was up there, and we were concerned about Japan coming across and invading Australia. And they said, look, don't worry, all the reefs north of Australia are not charted, except we've charted them. So we can get in and out, but no one else knows how to do it. It's indefensible, it's a defensible thing. And they rolled out the map and showed in the bunker, which of course is not, it would have been in Victoria Barracks in Melbourne. They showed the new Prime Minister the thing, and they said, this is secret, we've got it, stuff like that. And the Prime Minister said, are you sure the Japanese haven't got this map? Absolutely sure. And then the Prime Minister actually pointed onto the map, a tiny little thing saying printed in Japan. And then, since then, the Australian Mapping Corps has grown. I don't know what it does now. But it's a unit where Australia makes its own maps and does it. Of course, obviously, it's stupid nowadays with so much technology going across. However, the Mapping Corps actually had to go up into remote Papua New Guinea. Now, what is true is that no one has found non-contact in the Amazon or Papua New Guinea. Papua New Guinea is the island up the north. And it's several stories. There's one story of, so I know the people who know the people who did this. This person had a plate with a tooth on it. And what would happen is that they'd be in their tents. They went up there in their tents and stuff like that. And the people would be around, and they'd go and have a crap in the actual, people would dig up the crap and have a look at the crap, and this person came out of the tent, and everyone was waiting around for him when he woke up, and sort of didn't clap or anything. They were all interested, and so one time this person said, "Oh, I'll show you magic," and he took out his tooth and showed it to everyone on the plate, and then put it back in. And then a few days later, there was this person there with a bloody mouth and a tooth showing he'd ripped out a tooth as well. And that was not there. And so what they did is they got to the village with gifts and stuff like that. I mean, you got to understand that there's malaria and all this type of crap around. It's like, it's a tough place, Papua New Guinea. And they told them how to build this helicopter landing pad, and they told one village, this village, on how to build this helicopter landing pad, and I don't know exactly what exactly it was, they did it and they worked on it, and then they radioed in, and then there was a delay or something like that, and weather, and then they came back and they came in, and with the helicopters, which would have been the Huey helicopters. I have to tell my mates who are helicopter pilots of it. So they flew in. They might even know. It's amazing how all these stories, I don't know whether it's true, but that you go and they're sort of like cants. They've gone in and you find out, oh, that's true, or I've known that, oh, I knew that aspect of it. But when they flew in down this valley, every village had a helicopter landing pad. So even though they were all remote and they had given extremely complex details on what to do, that had been communicated right throughout throughout the sector. And so they came in and That was amazing stuff like that. Now, this is what I really want to say, that we are in an isolated community here out in Australia, we have to sort of accept that not people are not bad people for doing what they do, and they're not bad people for communicating incorrect concepts. They are perhaps sloppy for being so confident that they can't see their own mistakes, but it is not bad, and it's expected that they have learnt the behaviour to disregard quantum mechanics. To when someone, if someone was to actually say, well, look, your fundamental belief system, it has to change because we now know this. They're not bad, but at a certain point, we have to grow up. We have to move forward. We have to embrace the new quantum physics. Look, we can do this year after year, but there's got to be a certain time when you have to tell people the facts of life. It's not, you know, the Tooth Fairy is a great, great theme. It's a great story. It's a great binding thing. But at a certain point, we've got to do it. And it's equipping people to deal with the hard realities of the world. Now, what I was going to say is, what is the story for actually finally telling the truth? What is the story? Why would you say the truth? And I want to tell a story of back in the 70s or 80s, I suppose, the 80s. So in Australia, we had, back at that stage, something which people cannot hardly imagine. We had these huge psychiatric hospitals with big wards and locking people up. And now we just neglect them. We put them out on the street, or we drug them, or we get the police to manage them, or we put them in prisons, or not really. And also back then, there was a lot less medications to treat people, and there was, so people would no longer be able to care for themselves. And this is people that we would say, what the heck's going on? So if you had Parkinson's disease, you'd eventually not be able to feed yourself, and you'd be put in these things, and you'd be get confused and old, and especially this is sort of a totally different attitude nowadays in terms of I now know looking after some war veterans, that they get confused and aggressive, and it's just, it's no longer a reaction against them. Oh, we know that you're confused. We know that you're aggressive. Whereas previously, of course, I must admit, coming across. What I want to say is there's this particular case, and I don't think I'm doing anything. It was, he would look up onto the clouds, and, he missed his wife, and he was hallucinating, written on the clouds, George, I love you, from his wife. His dead wife was writing on the clouds to him, and that was making him intensely happy. And people were saying, at the time, should we tell him that he can actually see it, or, you know, how should we handle it? And particularly, that means that his psychotic medication isn't working. And I'm not going to say this is right or right or wrong, but the psychiatrist at the time said that you have to be, you've got a duty, a professional duty here. You can't sort of vary your treatment to your own value judgments of whether you think this is a good delusion or a bad delusion. Obviously, from experience, people with good delusions, on that basis, can get even more confused and get bad delusions, like George kills so and so. And so those illusions can change. So you've got to be very consistent with them. And very much similar here, people are being deluded that the safe and secure sort of newsreels from yesteryear is good science. And there's a feeling that you're a bad person if you actually tell them to change, and they feel it's not being, you're not being disrespectful to them, you're not being angry at them, but you're being professional. So that's that story. You know, there is actually no right answer to it. That is, this is often the things you are presented with. There is no right answer to. That is, you've got a better answer, but the other answer, you lose things with it. So, yes, it is a very reassuring thing to teach into the pool that has always been taught to these people who waited on the shorelines at the Solomon Islands for the US to come in the 1950s, 1960s, the cargo cult was still going. This is the beauty of, you have to actually understand that, I'm just nearly home now, you've got to understand that the, just hope my daughter's okay, that cultures are designed to communicate information and belief systems and to keep them alive and to punish people who move outside it. That's how it works. If you had every belief system being treated equally and people really didn't punish them, they would just dissipate. It's sort of like, I don't know. It's logical and understandable, and you can't get angry at people. However, that being said, in that situation, that type of ilk does attract the psychopath. So, the psychopathic people, the people who will suddenly turn and be hard to manage, and if they've got faulty logic in what they're explaining, you cannot expect them to have perfectly clear logic. If their explanations are ridiculous, okay, it's a symptom of another potential danger. So I can't quite describe it. These sorts of people, I'm not putting them down because I don't know them or anything like that. But for sure, you can be sure that someone who doesn't have sort of power and wants to have power over people without, I don't know, without logic, without reason, they believe in themselves, their own, their explanation of the world has a surprisingly large amount of the world's here because I'm here type of view, and I'm in this job because I'm the chosen one, I'm the best person for it, rather than this sort of objectivity. If they don't have the objectivity in their explanations, and they don't have the objectivity to actually modify them, given, right, or to pause, to even pause and consider someone else, if they don't have that there, a lot of them themselves are not to be there. They're going to attract someone into their realm who therefore justifies the way they behave. That's my overall view. So I do know that, but if you really look at it, everything's a really short-term game. They're only interested in their explanation getting through the next, they've got a different time frame. They've got a very short time frame, which is ideal for a sort of incoherent. They've got to be able to reset to fend off truth coming at them from heaps and heaps of different angles. Or they can go. So we're here. back at Glenbrook, and I hope this is some sort of coherent and interesting podcast. 54 minutes. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.